Chris was arrested in April of 2021, and he was held without bail until his sentencing, which happened earlier this year. And I talked to him a bunch of times throughout his incarceration while he was awaiting trial.
Does he regret what he did?
No, he feels like he's being railroaded and completely sort of jammed up by the system, so to speak, and sees himself as a political prisoner.
Why'd you call it homegrown?
Because I think very often when we talk about these tensions, these divisions, people in the media often refer to other people coming into a place from somewhere else, and we really want to make clear that this is a homegrown issue, a homegrown problem that we need to address.
So you were just at the Venice Film Festival. What's next?
We have about 25 festivals coming up around the United States and Europe, and those festivals will be listed at homegrown.film as they become live.
What do you expect to happen next January 6th?
I feel like that if the if this was a foreign country, the State Department would issue travel advisories for this fall. So I'm very concerned with the height of sort of violent rhetoric that only seems to have gotten worse since last year. I feel like perhaps on January 6th, we might not see what we did in 2021. But between the election and January 6th, I think we were prepared for an escalation of violence.
Michael Primo, director of the new documentary, Homegrown. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
We're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2H2BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Wake up, KBOO listeners. It's time to support local, community-based media this fall by donating and becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give. When you contribute now up until September 21st, your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $11,000 thanks to listeners like you. Double the impact, double the fun. So go now to kboo.fm/give and support us today.
A quick thank you to the recent donors to our fall drive. Thank you to Jennifer E., William R., Kaya P., and two anonymous donors. Be like these nice people. Donate to support the radio you love at kboo.fm/give. Now, your KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this special membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News, Portland City Council rejects an appeal to block a Live Nation venue's construction in the city.
A man was shot and killed on Thursday at a Blue Line Mac stop.
And in national news, the gender pay gap grows for the first time in a decade.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, September 20th, 2024. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm John G.
And I'm Eliza Yurkov. A Portland City Council vote moves plans to build a Live Nation venue in Portland, north of the Hawthorne Bridge, forward. Local nonprofit Music Portland filed to appeal the zoning changes the city made to accommodate the large venue on the southeast waterfront. They worried about Live Nation's business practices and the impact they would have on the independent music scene in Portland. Portland City Council voted to reject their appeal. The venue's developers say they're thrilled about the outcome. The new concert hall would be on the central east side on Southeast Water Avenue, and it would hold 3,500 people. Developers say it could open in 2026. Music Portland's appeal was shut down, but the final vote on the project will be on October 2nd. Music Portland said in a statement, quote, "We are very disappointed that City Council approved a deal with a company accused of significant crimes by the U.S. Department of Justice and 40 states in spite of the overwhelming opposition from local music businesses, fans, and artists," end quote.
A man was shot and killed on Thursday at the MAX station at 148th and Burnside at the eastern edge of the Hazelwood neighborhood. Police responded to reports of a shooting just before 7:30 p.m. and found the victim dead at the scene. Feliz Juarez Perez, 42, was detained and then arrested and charged with second-degree murder and unlawful use of a weapon. No additional details, including the victim's identity, are yet available.
New research shows the gender wage gap widened for the first time in two decades. The Census Bureau finds full-time working women make 82.7 cents for every dollar a man makes. This is down from 84 cents for every dollar in 2022. Dr. Jamila K. Taylor with the Institute for Women's Policy Research says states can enact policy solutions to address pay equity issues.
Factoring in things like access to childcare, the affordability of childcare. We know that childcare is much more expensive in this country. There have been conversations nationally about price gouging and the price of groceries, even though, you know, we know the economy has cooled down.
While the economy is growing stronger, she notes some sectors are still recovering from the pandemic. Childcare affordability problems existed before the pandemic, but were only exacerbated. She feels one way the nation can help close gender wage gap is by expanding their respective child tax credits. Affording childcare improves women's ability to make sufficient wages to meet their needs and those of their families. The Census Bureau data also shows minority women are earning far less. Black women working full-time make 66.5 cents for every dollar the male counterpart makes. For Latina women, it's less than 60 cents for every dollar. But, she says, several challenges are preventing the gender wage gap from closing any further.
We still need the political will to broadly support addressing the gender wage gap in this country. Better access to higher paying jobs, you know, particularly for women, is important.
If the gender wage gap continued on the same slow but steady narrowing trend, all women workers would have reached pay equity with men by 2088. Pay equity between all full-time year-round workers will take over 30 years, finally coming to fruition in 2066.
More of the promised preschool for all slots are coming to Multnomah County mid-year in January. The county can add 174 more seats come January. The Multnomah County Commissioners voted unanimously on Thursday to tap into the program's contingency fund to help pay for a mid-year expansion. Voters passed the Preschool for All measure in 2020, and it promises to add 11,000 county-funded preschool seats by 2030. Right now, there are 2,070 preschoolers in the program. Come January, that will jump up to 2,244. Five county preschool providers will be expanding to new locations, and seven new programs have been added to the list. The Preschool for All program is accepting applications to join their advisory committee through September 30th. County commissioners agreed to delay a planned income tax increase to help fund the program that would have taken effect in 2026. They say the program is pretty flush with cash, and they can afford to wait to increase the tax on high-income earners until more seats are available.
City Councilor and mayoral candidate Renee Gonzalez has announced his intention to introduce stronger penalties for graffiti and other forms of vandalism. In a post on the social media platform X, Gonzalez stated, quote, "Portland's natural beauty has been overwhelmed by widespread vandalism, like graffiti covering our street signs and small businesses," end quote. Gonzalez believes that current vandalism laws are not enforced and that a new city-specific anti-graffiti ordinance is necessary. The ordinance would make painting graffiti on public property, as well as facades of private property facing the public right-of-way, a Class A misdemeanor with a minimum sentence of 7 days in jail and 50 hours of community service. Renee Gonzalez specifically seeks to curb vandalism during possible, quote, civil unrest scenarios, end quote, following the November election. Gonzalez and his office did not provide any evidence for their claims that increasing penalties will lessen vandalism in Portland. A number of high-profile graffiti arrests have occurred in Portland in the last year, most notably the arrest and indictment of Aiden Saul, Elias Geometro, and the conviction of Jerry Mihangos, Elias Kassar, in 2 to 2.5 years in prison.
A new federal rule to protect workers from extreme heat is open for public comment until December 30th, but it's already being touted as a potential lifesaver by labor advocates, even as Florida's actions are under scrutiny. Tramell Gomes has more.
A new federal proposal to protect workers from extreme heat is being hailed as a potential lifesaver by labor advocates, even as Florida faces backlash over its heat safety rollbacks. The proposed OSHA regulation is open for public comment until December 30th. It could bring long-awaited protections to millions of workers exposed to dangerous temperatures. Mickey Siegel de Hernandez is National Deputy Director for Occupational Safety and Health for the Communications Workers of America. She says Florida recorded more than 200 heat-related worker deaths between 2010 and 2020, and she's baffled by a controversial law Governor Ron DeSantis signed in April that blocks local municipalities from enacting protections for workers.
That bill also prohibits any kind of training or posting of information. It's insane. It's disgusting and insane, and also blames workers in the event that they do suffer from some kind of heat-related illness.
DeSantis had sidestepped criticism of the bill by saying it didn't come from him. Under the proposed OSHA rule, employers would be required to implement heat illness prevention plans, including access to water, rest breaks, and shaded areas. Siegel de Hernandez notes many of Florida's workers, especially those in outdoor industries like construction and agriculture, are at risk of heat exhaustion and heat stroke.
And all of these things are preventable. And without a standard, workers will continue to die. So we need to get something passed as quickly as possible.
The OSHA rule would mark the first federal legal protections for indoor and outdoor workers exposed to extreme heat. If it's approved, it could go into effect as early as next year. The National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health has recommended heat safety standards since the 1970s. But this is the first time the U.S. government has proposed comprehensive heat safety regulations applicable to most industries. This is Tramell Gomes for Florida News Connection.
Rising threats of political violence, a Federal Reserve rate cut, crypto industry campaign contributions, and reproductive rights are shaping today's political landscape. With more on the story, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I condemn political violence of any type, anytime. In fact, our founders really always believed that we should work out our differences at the ballot box peacefully, and that's the American way, and that's the way it should be.
Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, himself a subject of violent threats, is repeating that political violence is wrong following an Alaska man being charged with threatening six Supreme Court justices. Court filings say Panos Anastasiou made hundreds of often racist or homophobic threats to kidnap, torture, and execute the justices. Louisiana Republican Senator John Kennedy is facing criticism for accusing an Arab American leader for supporting terrorist groups and what he calls their allies during a congressional hearing.
You support can't Hamas. Bring yourself
I do
to
not
say
support Hamas.
You don't
or
support
any...
UNRWA. You don't support Hamas. You don't
I was very clear in my support for
UNRWA. You don't
I
support
oppose.
Iran. You should hide your head in a bag.
The Federal Reserve announced a long-anticipated shift, cutting interest rates by half a percentage point, the first cut in 4 years. Chair Jerome Powell says inflation has eased and the labor market remains stable, though cooler.
This decision reflects our growing confidence that strength in the labor market can be maintained and inflation moving sustainably down to 2%.
Stocks hit record highs on the news, but Mark Hayes with Americans for Financial Reform warns that a small group in the crypto industry is trying to use campaign donations to shape how that industry is regulated.
There's a small group of wealthy individuals tied to the crypto industry pouring unprecedented amount of money into campaign spending to dictate policy outcome that will help them to continue to profit.
The controversial lieutenant governor of North Carolina is denying allegations and refusing to end his campaign for governor. A CNN report says in the past, Republican Mark Robinson called himself a black Nazi and defended slavery on a pornographic message board. He was endorsed by former President Donald Trump. Republicans say the scandal could hurt him in the toss-up state. Controversial remarks about Ohio immigrants have drawn attention, but the incumbent in one legislative race says abortion is more important there. Democratic Representative Michelle Grimm serves a suburban Toledo district and describes herself as a women's rights advocate.
It's really important that voters know the intent of the Republicans. If we want to protect the right to reproductive access, we need to make sure that we do protect that.
But her opponent, Republican Wendy Hendricks, disagrees.
The people in Ohio spoke and answered how they want that to move forward. So it's really a non-issue for this campaign.
I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $30,000 by September 21st. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, KBOO presents Running on Air. Tonight, we're speaking with mayoral candidate Liv Ostlus. Tonight's weather will be clear with an overnight low of 51 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be clear and sunny with a high of 75. Today in history, in 2019, roughly 4 million people around the world staged protest demonstrations against climate change. Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg led the demonstration in New York City at the age of 16. The quote of the day is from American muckraker Upton Sinclair, who said, quote, "It is difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends on his not understanding it."
Tribes are heading to D.C. to lobby Congress to revive a World War II era program to help people afford health care who have been impacted by a toxic poison. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Members of several tribes will travel to Washington, D.C. next week in an attempt to get lawmakers to revive a program aimed at helping them afford health care due to toxic poisoning. The Mountain West News Bureau's Yvette Fernandez has this preview.
The Radiation Exposure Compensation Act was a federal program established in the 1990s aimed at providing financial support to people who were exposed to nuclear fallout and uranium mining dating back to World War II. It is particularly impactful for the Navajo Nation, where uranium mining was critical in the making of the atomic bomb.
We look at this as a social justice issue.
Spokesperson Justin Hostein says the latest version of the bill should be brought up for a vote.
They're repaid with sickness and death, and that's really just appalling. And this bill gives them a chance to survive.
Members of several tribes, including Navajo, Laguna Pueblo, and Zuni, have raised funds to travel by bus from New Mexico to Washington, D.C. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Yvette Fernandez.
A small group gathered in Nome, Alaska this week to honor two decades of Norton Sound Health Corporation's Tribal Healing Department. Attendees were treated to speeches from the tribal healers, native food, and a special drum performance. KNOM's Ben Townsend has more.
Standing before a crowd of family and friends, Maria Dexter read from a handful of handwritten notes.
"And although we have lost parts of our way of life with our language and subsistence lifestyle, I'm really happy and thankful that Norton Sound Health Corporation is keeping the traditional tribal healing program alive in this region."
Dexter helped start Norton Sound Health Corporation's Tribal Healing Department in 2004. Now, 20 years later, she's surrounded by seven women in the program, each wearing colorful cuss bucks as they listen intently to every word their leader speaks. The tribal healers are accredited by the hospital through a rigorous training program and employ a variety of native practices to care for their patients. Over the summer, the tribal healers handpick plants like stinkweed, surah, and rosewood for use in their practice. Following speeches from each tribal healer, elders were invited to fill a plate full of native foods, including seal and walrus. For dessert, attendees could indulge in tundra delight and agoutik, also known as Eskimo ice cream. A four-man drummer group led by Carl Topcock then took to the front of the room. They performed several songs over the course of half an hour as women from the audience took turns dancing. Just feet away from the drummers, Dexter took in the performance with her granddaughter by her side and great-grandson in her lap. She watched as the woman she had mentored, the people she had cared for, and the community she had served for two decades celebrated together in the small room. Reporting in Nome, I'm Ben Townsend.
On Thursday, the Fort Belknap Indian community in Montana welcomed home the remains of three children from the Carlisle Indian Industrial School in Pennsylvania. The names of the children are Elmita Heavy Hair, Bishop L. Shield, and John Bull. They died at the school in the 1890s. A repatriation delegation brought them home, which was followed by a wake, reinterment services, and a community feed. Earlier this month, the Office of Army Cemeteries began to disinter the remains from the Carlisle Barracks Cemetery of the three children and eight others from other tribes, including from South Dakota and Oklahoma. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
As society debates the advantages and pitfalls of artificial intelligence, this form of technology is finding a home at community colleges and technical schools, including in Wisconsin. Leaders say weaving AI into curriculum helps prepare students for emerging workforce needs. Mike Moen has the story.
Students enrolled at Wisconsin's technical colleges this fall might take a course where artificial intelligence is the star of the classroom. Officials say it could help produce a more robust pipeline of workers in the Badger State. Layla Merrifield, president of the Wisconsin Technical Colleges System, says manufacturers are making it clear they want a workforce that has the know-how in working with and programming machinery fitted with AI. She says that's why the system is integrating it with coursework at regional campuses.
Here in Wisconsin, we really have a structural workforce shortage, and our demographics are telling us that that will continue. And what we're seeing, it's really upskilling the workforce.
Elected officials face pressure to adopt regulations that would ensure artificial intelligence is used safely. Merrifield says schools in Wisconsin prioritize teaching students how to use AI ethically and appropriately. An analysis from the Center for Security and Emerging Technology says community and technical colleges have the potential to grow and sustain the AI talent pool, but barriers like inconsistent government funding need to be addressed. Merrifield says Wisconsin's campuses are coming off modest general aid increases from the legislature. She says they'll be requesting more in the next budget cycle, noting the programs technical schools offer can be costly to maintain. They also have to balance tuition affordability.
We understand that our students often come from limited means. They have limited financial resources, and so we try to keep tuition as low as possible.
And whether it's AI curriculum or other courses, Merrifield suggests they need the right amount of support to stay nimble and retool programming based on workforce trends. Waukesha County Technical College is one of the schools offering a class where students learn about the foundations of AI. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation.
A biodigester helps tofu manufacturers turn waste into energy. Island Spring Organics on Vashon Island, Washington, uses soybean pulp and whey to help power its tofu production. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. For nearly 50 years, Luke Lukowski and his team at Island Spring Organics have been making tofu on Vashon Island, near Seattle, Washington.
We'll make a couple of million pounds of tofu this year. We'll make 15 different varieties.
And now they're using waste from the production process to help power the operation itself. The company is partnering with the Seattle-based energy company Chomp, which installed what's called an anaerobic biodigester behind the factory.
Imagine it's like a compost bin, but it's enclosed.
Any type of food waste, in this case damp soybean pulp and leftover liquid called whey, can be put inside the biodigester's large sealed tank, where bacteria break it down in an oxygen-free environment. The process creates fertilizer that can be sold to farmers, as well as renewable biogas that can be used for energy in place of natural gas, a fossil fuel.
We receive the organic renewable natural gas and feed that into our boiler, which is then used to cook the ground soy pulp to make the tofu.
So Lukoski is able to use the byproducts of tofu production to make more tofu, while reducing his use of fossil fuels. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael is so glad it's sunny today.
Where do you carry your cell phone? What part of you would be damaged if the phone exploded? We never had to worry that before. What else could be sabotaged? Your hairbrush? Your doorknob? Bad enough to worry about some stranger coming at you with a knife or spraying some biological agent in your face. All these things have already happened, and so much more we'll never know about. There are places in the world where you check under your car before turning the key in the morning. Is cancer just a roll of the thousands of dice of your environment, your genes, how others treated you, how you treated yourself? Yes, people risk their lives for strangers, give food, clothes, and money to people they don't know. These things happen all the time, but seldom make headlines. Each day can bring danger, rewards, but mostly the safe, same old, same old. That's life. That's what all the people say. Paranoid on Tuesday, ecstatic today. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
Now we go to The Point Puzzle, a weekly radio puzzle produced by Pearl Stark at KPOV Bend. This week's puzzle has wordplay, countries, and pets.
It's time for the puzzle.
Last week, I asked you for an 8-letter word for a type of year starting now. It can be spelled with 6 letters of the Western scale, A through G, plus 1 note from the solfège scale, Do, Re, Mi. Well, the answer is academic. And our winner this week is Derek Reese, who listens to WUTC in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell, brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence. Books and pens.
For the new puzzle, start with the name of a country that only uses one vowel. Replace every instance of that vowel with a different vowel, and you can now separate it into 4 words. With the addition of the word A, you have a complete sentence that might be an insult to a pet. So again, start with a country that only uses one vowel. Replace all the vowels with a different vowel, and you can now separate it into 4 words. Add the word A, and you have a complete sentence that might be an insult to a pet. When you have the answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday.
When first unto this country a stranger I came, I called.
This has been Pearl Stark with your Point Puzzle for the week of September 16th. The Point Puzzle is produced at KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
You're listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News for Friday, September 20th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael and John G. The producer and engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Eric Tegadoff, Mike Moen, Edwin J. Vieira, Antonia Gonzalez, Farah Siddiqui, Trimmel Gomes, Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and Pearl Stark. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eliza Yurkov.
And I'm John G. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, so now is a great time to join. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and Grendel's Coffee Shop, located at East Burnside and 8th Avenue in Portland, featuring coffee, tea, sandwiches, and more. Information at grendelspdx.com.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, Springfield, Ohio schools are facing bomb threats because some people believe that Haitian immigrants are stealing and eating dogs and cats. According to candidates for the